Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. So, how you feeling? Got a scratchy throat, itchy eyes? Maybe you're sneezing a lot. You want to stay in bed? I'd say you're a sufferer of cedar pollen, the scourge of Central Texas. We want to know how you're coping with it. If you got a home remedy, please share. The number is 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. Some say the solution is easy. Just kill all the cedar trees. Later, we're going to find out why that's a terrible idea. We're going to talk to the cedar defender. But first, let's talk to the city's premier allergist, Dr. Paul Ratner. Dr. Ratner, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good afternoon.
So how bad is it right now? Are we in the worst of it?
Well, we were in the worst of it. I think the last couple of days, things have settled down a little bit. We went through a stretch for about 7 or 8 days where we had extremely high counts and then slowed down a little bit over the weekend. It seems to be picking up again, though, with the little colder temperatures and the north winds. But you know, we may be past the really bad peaks. Probably at this point, maybe 2.5 to 3 weeks more mountain cedar pollen.
2.5, 3 weeks more. That's people are. Some people are really suffering right now. I mean, why do some people really take it hard and other people not so much?
Well, everybody has a different level of sensitivity to the pollen, and there are years like this where everybody is allergic to mountain cedar. Is going to have a problem. I'm seeing and hearing from people I haven't seen in 15, 20 years because when we look back at our records, this looks like the worst year we've had since 1995. So at the levels that cedar has been this season already, anybody who's got any sensitivity to cedar is going to be affected.
Now, is it just the concentration of the pollen in the air or does it vary at all? Is it more, you know, pointed at us?
Well, I think it's related to the concentration. The amount of particles of pollen that are in the cubic meter air are tremendous compared to any other pollen, and that's just measuring it in north central San Antonio. If you live further northwest and up towards, you know, Bernie, Kendall County, areas like that, you're getting probably even heavier concentrations of it. It's been very sustained this year. We've had almost a perfect storm. We had a lot of fall rain. And we've had a lot of these colder temperatures and northers come through, which have sustained these healthy cedars this year. First time in a couple of years after the drought that the cedars have really come back.
Now, a lot of people have home remedies. They think that is a way to battle them. But, of course, you're a doctor, and you've got the pharmaceuticals and the meds. Do home remedies work?
Well, the problem with home remedies is, first off, it's very anecdotal. I mean, you have somebody telling something they think worked. But the problem is none of those methods have ever gone through any type of rigid scientific investigation where they've been studied in a blinded fashion and it's been organized and statistically analyzed. So all you really have is anecdotal stories. The other problem with the home remedies is some of them can be very dangerous. I mean, there are people who believe that eating local honey, because it may contain cedar pollen, is a remedy. But, for example, there you don't know the quantity of pollen you're getting, and if you happen to be very sensitive, you could actually be overdosing yourself with the pollen that happens to be in the honey. So, as a general rule, none of them have been shown to be particularly effective, and none of them have been studied in a manner that anybody could credibly say that they're effective. It's not the same process that medications and nasal sprays and pills go through to get approval through the Food and Drug Administration.
Have you heard about people saying to eat the berries from the
yeah.
ash juniper tree? Tell me about how yeah. is, does that, that work? Or is that
that's well, that's an old one, and that's been around for forever. The difference is the male trees are the ones that have the pollen, the orange cones and color on them. The female trees are the ones that contain the berries. So the berries contain no allergen or pollen whatsoever. So there would be no logical reason why eating the berries would make any sense. But, of course, you'll get people that will write in and people that have been in Texas for, you know, families for 150 years that will swear by it. But the truth is they taste terrible. They'll probably upset your stomach. They taste so bad the deer won't even eat them. So I don't think you're going to get any relief from eating the blueberries on a mountain cedar female tree.
How do I know that I should stop fooling around with home remedies and I should go see a doctor like you?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who are just miserable, and there are a lot of people that have to spend more time outdoors because of their profession or their lifestyle. I think if you've gotten to the point where you're getting the itchy eyes and the burning nose and the sneezing fits and the drains down your throat and you're trying the home remedies, you're trying the over-the-counter medications, you're not getting relief, I think that's time to go. Also, if you're getting any complications of it, if you're having sinus headaches, if you're starting to cough, if your ears are hurting you, anything like that, I think would be an indication that it's time to go ahead and get some relief.
And what do you do for somebody or any allergist? What are they going to do?
Well, the first line of treatment would be a combination use of nasal steroid sprays, things like Flonase and Nasonex that people are familiar with, and antihistamines either through a nasal preparation or through an oral preparation. If that doesn't work, sometimes we'll give an injection or a short course of oral steroids, which will definitely get you through the remainder of the season. But at this point, people are so sick that you're sort of behind the eight ball, and a lot of the medications don't work as effectively. The best thing to do is to start these medicines almost in anticipation of the season, a week or so, or right when the season starts, and they'll work a lot more effectively than trying to catch it now when you've been having symptoms for a couple of weeks.
What are the risks of not treating it and just if you're really being hit hard with it and you just hunker down at home and try not to expose yourself too much outside? But what's the worst that could happen to you?
Well, the worst thing is the complication. You can get a sinus infection. You can get a bronchial infection or an upper respiratory infection. You can get an ear infection. An infectious process that will set in because of all the swelling and all the drainage and all the irritation. That's really what we worry about, is that people will get something more serious as a complication of their untreated allergies.
And if you're just mildly, I just get it sort of mildly. I'm not really impacted that much. I just sort of bear with it. Is it better to just go about your daily business and just keep drinking water and things, or should I go for an over-the-counter medication?
Well, the medications are for the most part very safe, and and there's no reason to, if it's affecting your quality of life and you can't do the things you want to do, if you can't do your run in the morning and you can't take your walk and you can't work outside and you can't enjoy a day like we're having today, then, I think that, you're really looking not so much at symptoms but at quality of life and, not just hunkering down and spending, 6 weeks in the house, but trying to be able to get out there and live your life, go to work and enjoy your family and do the things we all want to do.
Now, is it really a fever? We call it cedar fever. Some say it's not really a fever, but some say it is.
It's not really a fever. The reason it got the term cedar fever is there's a substance released during an allergic reaction called histamine. That's what makes you itch and sneeze, but it also dilates your blood vessels. And so people who have a flare of their cedar actually feel warm, like they have temperature, which is the origin of the term cedar fever.
All right. Well, Dr. Paul Ratner, thank you so much helping us bust some of these myths about cedar fever, about the symptoms and ickiness that we feel. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk about the tree itself, the cedar tree or the ash juniper. And we're going to talk to somebody who says, don't hate the tree. The tree is doing pretty good. It's one of our friends. So we're going to talk about that. We want to hear your questions and comments. Stay with us. The number is 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. We're talking cedar fever, and the root of the problem is the cedar tree, the ash juniper. And there's a lot of misinformation out there about this hated tree. If you got a question or a comment about ash juniper, the cedar tree, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. We're joined by Professor Butch Taylor of the Texas AgriLife Extension Service and also Elizabeth McGreevy. She's the author and owner of Rock Solid Designs, a landscaping company, and she's also known as the Cedar Defender. Welcome back to this. Welcome to The Source, y'all.
Hi, nice to be on the show.
Okay, so Elizabeth, you say don't hate the tree, right? The tree is actually doing some good stuff out there in nature.
Yeah, it's just a symptom of greater problems, and that is the massive amount of soil erosion that has occurred in the last 150 years due to excessive, you know, clear cutting and overgrazing, and a lot of it occurred in the 1870s, 1880s, as a result of railroads coming in, telegraph poles being built, barbed wire being invented, and all of that came from the cedar tree. All the telephone poles, the posts for every barbed wire fence from here to Mexico to Canada came from here. You know, so there's massive amounts of destruction really to the land that it caused, you know, enormous amount of soil erosion, and to the point where the grasses could no longer take a foothold, and the cedar tree was really adapted really well. So it really is serving as more of a pioneer tree that we need to work with as opposed to just annihilating.
So Butch Taylor, are you there, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
So the cedar tree, the ash juniper, is it? I've heard some people say it's actually an alien species, but it's a native tree, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's been here for a long time.
Okay, and so, but there are a lot of farmers and ranchers that for many, many years they have been waging war against this tree, but they seem to be losing that war. What do you think?
Well, some are, and some are not. From an agricultural standpoint, there's nothing wrong with the cedar tree. It's when it starts to dominate the landscape, and so the berries, fruit produced on the tree are very palatable, and they're consumed by deer, raccoons, ringtails, coyotes, foxes.
Exactly.
There are different species of birds. And those are seeds are distributed across the landscape, and so we get a tremendous invasion and recruitment of new juniper seedlings, which tends to dominate the landscape and has a real negative effect on the carrying capacity of the rangelands after a while if it's not managed. I don't advocate getting rid of all the juniper, but just keeping it in moderation.
So, Elizabeth, I heard you out there. What were you saying?
Well, you know, the allergist, what is that, Dr. Radner?
Yeah.
He said, for one, that the deer do not eat the berries. That is not true. He also said that the eating the berries, the reason why people eat the berries for fever is because it has a lot of vitamin C and camphor. And as for the honey, there's no juniper pollen in honey. Honey is only collected, you know, it's collected by bees from flowers, not from airborne pollen. So eating honey does not work.
Okay, we've got a couple of callers here. Let's get them on the air. Joseph has called in. Joseph, thanks for calling in. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. So I have a question, I guess, for the professor mostly. I know that these are native species, and I'm a volunteer with Texas Parks and Wildlife, and we do a lot to get rid of the cedar trees, and even though they're native species, because we don't allow natural fires to occur, they kind of seem to encroach on the grasslands and plains where they normally wouldn't be. And cedars, I know from experience that from doing controlled burns, that they are highly combustible. And I would think that one of the reasons we do wage war on them is because they contribute to the wildfire problem we have in Texas.
So, yes. Butch?
Yes, they're a severe problem with the wildfire problem. And, again, I'm not advocating that we get rid of all the cedar trees, but we need to manage them and keep them at a moderate level because that's one of the negative effects of juniper is a significant contribution to the catastrophic wildfires we've experienced in the state the past few years.
So, Elizabeth, you argue that they're not that more fire susceptible than any other tree, right?
No. Dr. White at Baylor has found that they're moderately flammable. That is the foliage, green foliage, right? They become a problem when grasses and other fuels are allowed to grow up to the bark. The bark, which is very shredded, especially on the older trees, is extremely flammable. Now, of course, stacked up brush that hasn't been burned or chipped and shredded is extremely flammable once it dries up because of the oils in it.
Let's get Jean in on this conversation. She's called in. Jean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. 4 years ago, I was very, very sick with cedar fever, and I bought Cedar X, which is a little tiny jar, and I don't know what it had in it, but it fixed my problem then, and I haven't had a problem since. It seems to have made me immune.
Cedar X.
Cedar X.
Is that at the grocery store, the pharmacy?
You know, I don't know where I bought
it. I've never heard of Cedar X.
A friend drove me. Yeah. Somebody told me to try it 4 years ago, and I did.
All right. Well, so
bought it some kind of spa place.
Okay. Well, thanks for the tip, Gene. Appreciate that. Okay. So, Elizabeth, let me ask you another thing. People complain cedar trees are water thirsty, that they hog up a lot of water. Is that true?
Well, cedar trees use more water than a parking lot. They use more water than a sparse cover of grass, you know. But when it's almost the thing is the question becomes really complex when you look, first of all, at the size of the juniper. The report that came out in 1996 said that an average, like a 10-foot juniper, uses an average of 33 gallons of water per day, and that was an estimate by Dr. Owens, and that has been blown so out of proportion, taken as Bible across the board, applied to every single tree. It also was being applied to a juvenile tree. Now, younger trees across the board all use more water. I mean, that's why the cedar, the bark on it is really sappy and sticky, is because on the younger ones, because it is using more water than old growth trees. And nothing, it really makes me angry when I see people cutting down old growth cedars saying, oh, they're sucking water from the aquifer. I'm like, look, they're deep rooted. They're not competing with the grasses. And they consist mostly of heartwood. They don't have as much sapwood. And, you know, research across the board is showing that all trees, once they achieve overgrowth status, they're not using as much water. Now, do the younger ones, all packed in jam, really dense, you know, with very dense foliage, are they using water? Yes, they are definitely using more water than, you know, short grasses. But, again, like, you know, Dr. Taylor's saying, you know, you still don't want to go out there and just annihilate all the cedars, unless you're going with preventative measures to prevent more erosion. Because remember I said, it's the soil degradation that's been our biggest problem. So if you go in there and maybe take out swatches of the cedar, shred it, you know, so it can continue to improve the soil, then that's a good thing in the right areas. You definitely don't want to do that on slopes and things like that, where you can definitely get more erosion.
So Professor Butch Taylor of the Texas AgriLife Extension Service, we've heard stories of people cutting down cedar, removing it from their land, and springs coming back to life. Is that a folk tale? Does that really happen?
No, that's actually happened. But it doesn't happen everywhere. Whether it'll happen or not depends on the geology of the resource and landscape you're dealing with, and it's a very complex issue, and you may get increased spring flow, but it may not make a really big difference in aquifer recharge. You will get increase in water availability if you've got a dense stand of juniper and you manage those trees, reduce their density, you will get an increase in water availability for the growth of other plants, but it doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a big increase in aquifer recharge. But you can get increased spring flow and stream flow and increased seepage of water by managing your cedar, at least initially, until you get other plants to start to grow in that area.
So, Elizabeth, our cedar defender, I mean, what about that? You know, bringing springs?
No, that's absolutely true. And that's what, see, the thing is that you can't take any older research. You got to focus on the newer research, because we have a lot of hydrologists, geologists going underground to see what's really happening. And what they are agreeing on is that if you just do it like your little tiny local focal, you know, your just smaller areas, you can enhance the spring flow. But for legislators and all to think that this is a cure-all solution to get more water, you know, so that the cities can continue to use more water than the cedar trees, you know, you can't apply it to the large scale. In other words, using
I mean, I don't think anyone's saying kill all the cedar trees so we can, you know, mow water our lawns.
I hear that all the time. No, I hear, no, not that, but I do hear a lot of people saying, let's get rid of all the cedars. Let's get rid of all the cedars. I constantly hear that. And no, there are actual, I've read about, you know, politicians saying, oh, let's go apply this, you know, to the large scale that maybe we can get more water in the aquifer. But that's what the research is showing now, is that, no, we can only use this at the small scale based on your own site conditions, your own geology, your own soils, you know, your slopes and all that. I mean, you have to go with what you have. You can't apply this information,
So, Elizabeth, what do you tell people who are really suffering from cedar fever and they just wish these trees would go away? What do you tell them to remind them that the cedar trees are part of our natural surrounding and they were here before we were here?
Well, I tell them first is do a neti pot, flush the pollen out of your nose. That's what I do. I just tell them that we need to stop focusing on the cedar tree, that the soil is the problem. And we're never going to solve the problem until you solve the soil. And that the cedars are actually kind of act as pioneer species and old growth species.
All right.
Let's try to get more of the old growth back.
Elizabeth McGreevy, thank you so much to Cedar Defender and Professor Butch Taylor, Texas AgriLife Extension Service, informing us about the cedar tree. And this is The Source on KSTX. Thank you so much for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.